intimate laws for us. See, as I can see that the white people are pretty shaky now, 1991, about the stock. Supposing if we start making laws for them, I wonder how would they feel. This is a shame. I would say this is a shame. My feelings is that leave us alone. We want to live in peace. We were created by God on our land. I'm objecting, opposing to every law that's been made for our people today. Limited entry. Some people are on a payroll. They don't care. They made it bad for our people. Our children going to high school now and no work for them. We fought against it, limited entry, but when they begin to make a report in Juneau, they didn't give the bad side, they just give the good side. Today our people are really having a hard time. With my age, I begin to think about my grandchildren. I took them out on a small boat so they could have enough money to buy shoes for their schooling. They're really punishing our people. And I don't like to see these things. Beginning of a land settlement. Some call it land sue. I was quite young here in this hall when they began to talk about it. What the elderly was pointing it out, let the United States pay what they took out from our land. Fish, gold, timber, let them pay for it. The politician put a big twist in it, call it a land sue. Then when we want our piece of land, they would say, how long have you been living there? The Tlingit. How long have you been living there? You can't get it. As fast as people coming from lower 48, Alaska is free. We heard that several times. And it is true, free for them. But it's hard for us, our own land. And I'm not satisfied with these things. Not too long ago, a sportsman came to our community. I happened to be a member of a sport, a local advisory. This sportsman said, we want to see a Tlingit come back to bow and arrow. No rifle, no motor. Canoe, you can get all the subsistence you want. Everything is begin to go now. Nobody seemed to say anything, so I got up and told him, we'd like to come back to that life, but I'm going to say one thing. Move back where you come from. We'll have plenty to eat. These are the things, you know. Now, not too much fish. Whose fault is it? I personally know whose fault is it. But there's no man can admit these mistakes. Across the Baranof, Chichikov Island, where we used to get our food, now the food is not even fit to eat from across there. I'm on southeastern Alaska, just the Tlingit Nation living in Alaska and southeastern. They know that the Admiralty Island belonged to the Tlingit Nation, the Raven Clan, with their children that's living on it. They didn't get it free, it cost them fortune. They give a name to Point Gardner. They give a name to Point Retreat, Hutsnuwatlatuh. so the Tlingit Nation would know who it really belongs to. People, the Mono herself, didn't come as their police to the island them days. But the chiefs would say, come, eat with us, but don't break the dish. Who knows what it is, the dish? Siadaka wants to break the dish. They already broke the dish. Now the white people want to step in now and just smash the dish to pieces. Isn't that a shame? Belongs to somebody else. I'd like to say to our people, hey, we still own it and it's ours. Our land was carved into stones, our land marked before Russia or any white man put their foot on our land. And it's still there. Who wants to listen to these things? My first trip to D.C., I was talking to one of our chiefs over there, Billy Jones. You're going to find our friends down there. There we got some friends among them, and we have enemies. Where he began to talk about the whites and the Tlingit. They don't treat us right, but they take our children into army and navy, but we don't get the treatment which we're supposed to be getting. Now they want to take everything away from us. I don't approve of these things. They begin to ask me down there, is this true? I said, this is true. But how many of the people would be talking like this? Of what they told me down there, they're going to step in if they know all about these sins. And up today, the way the law has been made for our Tlingit Nation, it's made behind our back. That's supposed to be against the law. We're not aware of what's happening. They don't come and sit down with us, but this is the way you're going to live. I don't approve of these things, and I don't like to hear it. Supposing our Tlingit would say that, yeah, we will sell our stock, but don't let the white people set a price on our stock. I don't like to see any stock would go less than 5 million or 10 million if they want it that bad. Too many times that I've been among our leaders, then they would say, this is the way the law is made for us. A law could be mended. We are suffering today. I'm not happy. Sometimes my tears would roll out where I'm sitting. And again, for closing, I'd like to say that nobody owns our land. We own it. Our marks are there. Unless if they show me Bill of Sale here, this is where your chief signed on Admiralty Island. I'd go for that. But up to now, there's no man can find it, Bill of Sale. So I would say after this study goes through, I'd like to ask them, go easy with us now. Let's have what we want. We're not getting what we're supposed to be getting, our food. They put limit on it. Just like now, 2 days and a half fishing. Who's going to be living on these things? Might be all right for big city where they have big projects, big mills, any place you go your work, but over here, nothing. This is what bothers me. And I don't like to see it happen. And I don't like to see them put a date on it, 1991, time for you to sell your stock. Along with the settlement, 160 acres were promised, keep on promising, it's going to be yours, 160 acres. When they made settlement, the poor people were left out, they got nothing today. And that's a shame. Somebody take a look at this, they will be feeling bad for Tlingit people. There might be more I want to talk. I'm taking too much of your time.
Well, I sure appreciate your coming and giving this account of the Tlingit people, Mr. Jim.
Don't feel that I'm mad at you, but this is the true story of what's happening to our people here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
People have the time to contain themselves, being aware of what's happening. My name is John Howard, Senior. Hand roller on here, Hunts, obsessed. I've done a lot of construction work in my lifetime. Born and raised in Tenneke Springs, Alaska. Been here a better part of 25 years. Briefly, I'd like to share with you my views on the land claim settlement. As a young person back in the 40s, 30s, when I first heard about the land sue, I couldn't believe it, you know. The fact is, I couldn't even accept the idea that we were going to settle with the federal government. So many meetings I've heard that the Russians sold Alaska to the United States. The fact is, I have questioned who did the Russians buy it from that they can sell the Alaska over the counter like a toy. I've never did get a reply on that. To me, the land claim settlement is unjustly settled. That's the way I see it. It's unjustly because the lands, there's 44 million acres involved in the settlement. The Southeastern Tlingit Indians, Haidas, and the Tsimshian got 300,000 of that 44 million. What happened to the other? That's only a third of a million of acres. The wording they've used so many times has been very irritating to me because they like to tell us we settled with the native peoples. The fact is they did not settle with the native people. They settled with the cooperation, there it lays. And the native peoples are still looking in. As for 1991, now that part there, if I had my way, I questioned that so many times. Why didn't they settle with 100% per capita to begin with instead of waiting for 1991? That's the outcome of 1991 is 100% per capita if our stock is worth anything by then. It's a literal statement on my part, but the fact is there. The fact, the picture is there. They got to settle us 100% per capita. Why wait for 1991? There are many things formed within the corporation, such as Heritage Foundation. I've given that quite a bit of thought. When the white people start buying into this corporation, they're going to be wondering, what's that thing doing in there? Well, what kind of a profit are we going to get out of this corporation buying into something like this? The white man's going to go in there for the money, not for the Heritage Foundation. To me, that's going to be money wasted. As Mr. Jim here has related to you, that the shores of this island on both sides are native people used to migrate from one camp or one community to another. They got their own campsites. I gave that a thought so many times before the land claim settlement became a reality. Maybe we're going to get part of that, claim it. Yet I can't understand, sit over here and say I'm totally in agreement with the land claim settlement. I've been involved with so many arguments over the settlement before it even became a reality. Why should we settle for something that's rightfully ours in the first place? Why don't the federal settle with me? I own this land, that's mine. That's my people, the bones of my people. Russia had no business selling it in the first place. They didn't buy it from us. And I had a grandfather who used to tell me a lot of stories, some I've never heard around here. The garments he showed me were made before cloths were ever made. It was made out of skin. It was so tattered, he used to tell me, handled with care, just a little fellow, wasn't very big. The garments were black with smoke. People used to live in a smokehouse back there 200-300 years ago. That's when a garment was made. At my grandfather, 90 years old, back in 46, 47, when he died in an accident, boating accident. And she shared with me the floods they had long ago, which was passed on to him by his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his uncle. That story must have been about 300-400 years old when he told me about it. That is the flood. The flood. Now, my grandfather used to tell me a lot of fairy tale stories, and I thought, there is another one. When I came out of the service in 46, I saw him sitting at the dock. I didn't realize it would be the last day I'd ever see him. And he repeated that story. He was pointing out those mountains and naming those mountains in his tongue, where some of our people survived that flood. After I became a Christian, started reading the Bible, I read about that Noah's flood. Now that's the one he was referring to. So it wasn't a fairy tale on his part. So you can just imagine how aboriginal we are as a Tlingit-Indian Saranac in Alaska. I still oppose the land claim settlement. It has complicated our lifestyle. That's all it's ever done. We're gradually being regulated out of our lifestyle, not by the federal government, it's by the state. We're under the state government now. I have appreciated the federal government. The crumbs used to fall off the BIA's table, and I just quit falling altogether. So this is a view of I will always live with. This settlement, to me, that just shouldn't have happened at all. I try to read into this settlement, the wording of the settlement in the Alaska statute. I can't believe what I was reading. The people, whoever represented my people, they put the ink on the paper and agreed to the wording of the settlement. It's unbelievable, the things we had to give up. Briefly, this is my testimony, this is my views on my part, Honorable Burgess. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Berger, my name is Walter Sobolev. And like most Tlingit people, I have several Tlingit names. I'm commonly known as Tawu Chun of the Raven Tribe and the Dog Salmon Clan. And recently I was given a ceremonial name, Kajakti, and I'm very proud of that name. And I try to carry it with a great deal of respect. No matter what the weather may be like, to know that we own land gave us comfort, gave us refuge. It was home. From it we gained food. From it we gained medicine. On it we performed the ancient ceremonies. It gave strength to the clan. It gave strength to the family life and courage and pride to carry on their way of life. And strange as it may seem, that in 1984, that kind of thought still prevails, and it surprises me that the culture is not extinct like in Egypt or in other parts of the world. It is very much alive. The language may not be too strong, but the art is very strong. The desire to eat the Tlingit food still is quite there. One of our Tlingit law is that the land for the tribe and clan is inherited. It is as though people stand right in their proper lineage in land inheritance. We are in ownership, we were in ownership of the land. And according to Tlingit law, there was no cutoff date for anyone, much less babies, children, as they could also inherit land. So land inheritance was endless. Needless to say, it was a law of perpetual occupancy. I repeat, it was a law of perpetual occupancy. Yes, it was tax-free, and it is always ours. Unfortunately, now native laws have come into conflict. Non-native laws have come into conflict with traditional native rights. There continues to be efforts in the direction of extinguishing native laws. I am not saying that all of our traditions are perfect. I'm saying that the basic traditions of our people stand as living monuments. Around these things, the people endeavor to live with a sense of justice, a sense of pride, a sense of dignity, a sense of honor. As far as the year 1991 goes, and it's approaching fast, it appears that as much as we are all preparing for that target date, we may be caught very short. But again, this is Caucasian law. To this we must urge an absolute, I say absolute, extension of time beyond 1991 in favor of adequate resolution to meet requirements of the traditional people of Alaska.
Your statement. Let us suppose there is no, well, let us suppose there is no postponement of 1991. The question that arises, something urgently requires to be done. If a proposal were made to restrict the right of shareholders in Native corporations to sell their shares so that they couldn't sell their shares, suppose it came to that, that would mean that they would be required to give up their right to go out and sell their shares and get some money for the shares in favor of the collective interest of the Tlingit people in seeing that their land remained in their own hands. Would that be, perhaps you could tell me whether that would be something in keeping with Tlingit laws, or would it be opposed to them, or do you have any observation to make on that?
Well, it seems to me that when that time comes, it will depend on the intensity of the loyalty of Tlingit people as to who he really is or who she really is as regards to the traditional kind of people. I would say it this way. Wekau at kohene kayatutu tei kapi hunake isheri alaski alaska tu. Aho awe koka a. Some will say, I will sell. Another will say, Sukun dana sa akshi tutu tei. Sesho kahun. At uhene ach kustiye ach shaudaneye, my inheritance is not for sale. You will find some people like this. They think now of some of their shares in Sea Alaska as an inheritance. It's more than dollars and cents. It's a symbol, it's a picture of their land. And so many of our people feel that way. A few indeed will fall short because they have been acculturated to Western civilization. And it can happen, it will happen, but there will be a goodly number who will feel so strongly, so loyal to, whether he be Athabascan up the interior, way up north, the Eskimo folk, people down here. There's some mixed feeling about this, but you will find some people who really cling to the tradition of their ancestors.
Well, you've put all of this so eloquently that I don't know what to say except thank you very much, sir.
I'm pleased to be here.
I hesitated whether I should speak or not because I'm a non-Indian, but I work for the IRA and the federally recognized tribal government, which isn't really functioning as a government except in relationship to the federal government's relationship with tribes in regards to contracting federal programs and like that. And also I was asked to speak if I thought it might be appropriate. Oh, Pete Neese. I'm an employee of the IRA, and as such, my title is planner, and as such, it's required, it's become required of me to research federal Indian law and Angoon's history in regard to the IRA and the relationship of the federal government to the IRA. There's some gaps in that research, but eventually I hope to get it filled in. But the reason I thought it necessary to speak is because there's been a great deal of confusion and misunderstanding in regard to what role the IRA would play in relationship to trust status of land. Ivan stated that something about the IRA and the trust status of land. The IRA is not a requirement for placing land in trust with the federal government. And some of you may recall that Robert Pirtle talked about this some, and what did the tribes outside think about trust status of land? And he, if you recall, he said that not one that he knew of found it a problem to have land in trust to the federal government. That was a protection and asset, and that everybody that he knew outside Indians wanted to put more land into trust, and they were attempting to do that. Also, another misunderstanding is the IRA, Indian Reorganization Act, has nothing to do with establishment of sovereignty of tribes. The sovereignty of tribes was before the IRA. You couldn't be, the IRA can't establish sovereignty. The federal government can't establish sovereignty. Sovereignty exists, like you say, there was reference, the sovereignty comes from the history you were talking about, from before the flood. You could say that God gives sovereignty to people. And also the history, the Tlingit history, includes the flood, the Ice Age, and occupation of this land continuously. That's sovereignty. And it's recognized all over the world. That's one of the reasons that all the Aboriginal indigenous people all over the world are looking at how the Claims Act affects this sovereignty, because any Claims Act is based on that sovereignty. And there's a lot of political confusion in regard to IRAs. People will cite problems that the IRAs have had over the years. Well, one of the reasons they've had problems is because they've been in the forefront of dealing with the federal government. And the federal government has tried to use the IRAs to manipulate the people and obtain land and compromises over the people. However, that didn't work out. The IRA turned out to be stronger than what the federal government anticipated. There was protections in the IRA, and it strengthened sovereignty of tribes. Angoon's IRA was established in the 30s, and prior to that, it had a traditional tribal government, obviously. So, and there's still villages in Alaska that have traditional tribal governments. They're not IRAs, and they're federally recognized, and they're also recognized by the state. So any solution that would come to amendments to the Claims Act would not need to involve the IRA. You could either fall back on traditional government to create solutions, or utilize the IRA if you chose, but it's the people that would instigate or create any kind of tribal government or any kind of government that would come up with solutions to that involving self-government. And this is what sovereignty means, is self-government, self-determination. And that hasn't been lost. Like Charlie said, the Claims Act is wrong in that it uses the words extinguishment of Aboriginal rights. All right, if the drafters of that Claims Act knew what they were doing was right, why would they need to stick that provision in there? Why would they feel that it was necessary to say, all right, here's the settlement, but in addition to that, all your Aboriginal rights are extinguished? Why would they need to do that if they felt that the Claims Act was the solution and was covering everything? They knew it wasn't, and they knew that it was wrong, so they stuck that in there, and that's, in my opinion, illegal. And Congress wasn't appropriate for it to be in there, because if that was the purpose of the Claims Act, to extinguish all Aboriginal rights, then it should have said that on the cover of the bill, and everybody should have been told that that was what the Claims Act was for. In any case, I wanted to cover that because of I would hate to see political disagreements over IRAs or whoever's involved in IRAs obstruct some solution that the people could come up with. And I would stress it that the IRA is a federally organized corporation, and the federal government recognizes it as a federal governing body, although it hasn't functioned that way in Angoon since the 30s. And I assume that it stopped that function as a tribal government when the city government was adopted, which I believe the city government is also an extension of and a personification of tribal government. In other words, the people can choose any government they want or change their mind, and city government is one of the governments the people have chosen. And they have the prerogative to reestablish tribal government. The Claims Act has affected funding in regard to the federal government, and the attitude is that the Claims Act has provided to people with money, therefore they don't need the BIA programs, and gradually these programs are being terminated. Social services, we believe by 1986 there won't be any social service funding, and general assistance has been terminated altogether. Congress justified that by saying that the state should pick up that program, which they haven't done. Other laws that have been enacted more recently, the Indian Child Welfare Act, it's not adequately funded. And its main purpose is to keep Indian children in Indian homes. But you can't implement that without funding. Also, the BIA has come up with a conflict of interest that's and is starting, especially the new area director, Jake Listenkopf, is stated openly that, as far as he's concerned, his policy is to support the Claims Act profit corporations and city governments rather than tribal governments. And he's shifting literally millions of dollars to profit corporations that would and should and are supposed to go to the contracting entities, the tribal contracting entities such as the IRAs and the region, Tlingit and Haida, and other regional corporations. One conflict that's created is that this federal money has gone to Sitka, several millions of dollars, probably. Probably $6 or $7, maybe $8 million has gone from the BIA to support Sitka's logging activities, which is in direct conflict with and other their other business activities, their other profit corporation. They did that, and in fact, Jake says that he asked for a waiver to do that. And this was not in compliance with the regulations or 25 CFR. And certainly not, I mean, there should be an order of priority use of that funding. We have run into a great deal of conflict and animosity from the Bureau. And we feel that that's based on their involvement and their conflict of interest with Shattuck and Sitka. So that's one of the results of the Claims Act, is a hidden policy of the Bureau and the BIA and activities to obstruct Angoon's IRA in contracting and obtaining funding. In fact, I recently wrote a letter to Senator Murkowski, several letters, but just recently another letter stating some of these, what we feel are violations and malfeasance of the BIA and conflicts of interest.
Thank you, Mr.
My name is Frank Jack. I come from Angoon. My grandparents came from Angoon, and I made Angoon my home also. I'd like to comment on the words that's been said tonight. You know, there's always two people involved. It's our people, the Indian, and the people from the outside. They make law for us, or either against or for us. And from what I can see and what I can gather tonight from 1991, you know, I'm strongly opposed of it. For one reason, looking back on the Old Testament side of the Bible, there were two people involved, two brothers. One of them was hungry and the other one had lots to eat. And one of the boys that had lots to eat, he sold his, that he talked to his brother that he would sell his right to his brother that had lots to eat. You may say for a pot of beans. And from what I can gather tonight, what's been said, I know we are involved in it, our people. And from the standpoint on your side, you're trying to buy our share from us, 1991. The boy that was hungry had to sell his birthright to his own brother. And the boy didn't have any privilege at all whatsoever. And in the standpoint of view on ours, we were here before the white man had come. Our people were here before the flood. And what rightfully is theirs, the land. And from what I can see, they want us to sell our birthright to them, that we may not have our privilege. And that's the point I would like to bring to you tonight. You know, I'm strongly opposed to what is going on. You know, because I come from the Tequiti tribe, the bear tribe. At one time, our people were in Cape Edgecombe. And when the people you call the Forest Service got into the scene with their rules and regulation and law that reads that when you see the sign of the Forest Service, you're not to touch that land, even though it belongs to you. And all the way from Cape Edgecombe, our people, our tribe, been going from here to there. Look at I'd like to point out Mount Edgecombe Hospital, where it's at. At one time, our people used to own that place. Our tribe owned that place. They called Japonski Island. What happened right there? Who was rightfully owned? Who is the owner of that place? And they took that from us. And coming on down through the channel from Sitka, you would see the very signs that the Forest Service had done to our land. Although we are the owners, but still we don't own it because of the sign that the Forest Service had put. They said it belongs to them. Now, if I were to sell my birthright to, I wouldn't have any privilege at all, but the person that will buy my share will have more privilege than I have. So therefore, I'm strongly opposed to sell my share. You know, I had the privilege to own a permit. And many people came to me and tried to buy it from me. I owned it because of the points that they had thrown at me at the time to own it. They said, okay, if you don't have that point, although our people fished in Alaska, although when I was a small boy, I began to fish with my uncle. From that time on up to the time after I got out of the service in 1946, I began to fish again. And then the points came out on owning permit. And that's the very same thing I can see in the people's face, okay, we're going to throw this at you. And if you don't move, I'm going to make another law and throw it against you again. And that's just the size of it. And that's what's happening. So I like the way my elder spoke, pointing out the very points that's going to harm us and that's going to benefit us up to the time when this comes about. And I believe if we listen to our elders, we're going to get someplace. So I just want to, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Well, would anyone else like to speak this evening? In the other villages we've been to, and some of the towns, we've tried to arrange for the high school students to participate in these meetings. And for instance, at Amonik and Tununik, we were there in February. Many of the teachers made it a class project in the high school for the students in groups to work out their presentations to make to the commission about ANCSA, the land, subsistence, 1991, and all of these other questions. That isn't possible at this time of year with school coming to an end in just a few days. We also have tried to, we have the great advantage here in Angoon that some of the elders spoke this evening, and I think we all regarded that as it is a privilege to be here to listen to them. In Sitka, we went to a lunch that they had for the elders yesterday, and we told them why we were there. They were having a lunch for the elders at the Women's Center in Sitka, and we told them why we were there and asked them if they would like to say anything, and so they kept us there for quite a while, and we had a lively discussion, and they presented their views. I told you we had the students, the Alaska Native students at the University of Alaska invited us to come up there so that they could be heard. In one way or another, we're trying to hear from all the people that we can. And so I'm glad that we were able to hear from quite a few of you this evening. We're trying to complete our work. We're trying to go, we can't go to all the villages of Alaska. Bob Willard at the Alaska Native Brotherhood in Juneau was telling me there are 244 villages in Alaska. Well, this commission can't go to all of them, or it would take us until 1991 to do it. But we're going to try to go to maybe 35 or 40 of them, and we've been to 11 already, and we wanted to go to as many villages in Southeast Alaska during this 2 weeks that we're traveling down here as we could. So we came over here to spend the weekend and to spend Saturday night here hearing your presentations, and of course we'll be back here at the community hall at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to hear additional presentations if people wish to make them. You might be interested in knowing that we've heard altogether now from, I think almost 300 people who've testified, just as you have done tonight. at these villages all through Alaska. And I think some of you know that we, earlier this year in Anchorage, we invited Native leaders from Alaska and from the lower 48 and from Canada and Greenland and Australia and Norway. We invited these Native leaders who represent Eskimos and Indians and Aboriginal people from Australia and Sami people from Norway and Greenlandic Eskimos and so on, and Indians and Eskimos from Canada. We invited all of them to come to Anchorage for 3 weeks, and at a round table, we had a discussion in public. It was televised, and we obtained their views about how those Native people in those other countries are grappling with these questions of protecting their land and enabling their children to participate in the settlements that they're trying to reach with their own governments. Because in Canada, they're settling their land claims. In Australia, the government has announced they're willing to settle the Native people's land claims. In Norway, there are 40,000 Sami people. They are the Native people of Norway, and they are now just getting started with their land claims movement. So they came and they were talking about what they want to achieve, what they want to do about their land claims. And of course, they're interested in knowing what you people in Alaska have been doing. One of the Native leaders from Alaska who had been responsible in a very well, I'll mention two of them. We had two Native leaders from Alaska who came and talked about ANCSA and gave advice to these Native leaders from other countries. One of them was Charlie Edwardson, Jr., who is from Barrow and was very active in working out a land claim settlement in 1971. And he said to these Native leaders from other countries, well, he said, don't make the same mistakes that we did. And we had some people who helped to write ANCSA back in 1971 who came from Washington, D.C. to those discussions. And they thought ANCSA had worked out pretty well. They thought it was a very fine and great success. Byron Mallott, the president of Sea Alaska, came and he said, and it was transcribed and it's written down, and he said that some important changes had to be made, and he suggested, in fact, that the land might have to be taken away from the corporations and turned over to some entity representing the people in the villages. So we've got people talking around this, around Alaska, and I hope that if they keep talking long enough, and I intend to make sure they keep talking, maybe we can work out a consensus, some new directions that will help to achieve what you all have in mind, protecting this land for future generations. Well, I get to speak at the beginning of the meeting and then at the end. So I guess that means that we'll adjourn, unless there's someone else who'd like to speak before we adjourn until tomorrow. Well, then I'd just like to thank you for coming tonight and to invite you to come back tomorrow at 2 o'clock after church, when we will resume the meeting and carry on tomorrow afternoon.